Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. Steeple might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the Audi Podcast Network. Joining me to talk about another spirited display, another positive first half performance and another defeat, I'm joined by Josh, Ed and Tom. Fellas, it doesn't half suck when you lose the match. Saturday lunchtime kickoff.
Weekend ruin, right?
A fucking killer for your weekend, isn't it?
It was weekend ruined, and then I watched Red Bull finally lose a race today, so it made up for it all. I was like, that's weekend unruined.
I was gonna say, I mean, I've got for like half an eye on the on some of the American football, which is about to end as well, and it seems like my team's actually gonna win. And we're doing okay, I think, still in the rugby off the top of my head as well. So hopefully, it's only balls that have caused me heartache and pain this weekend. But yeah, starting the weekend at lunchtime yesterday, it all started so well, fellas. You know, particularly after the international break, it can always be a bit hard for some teams to kind of get off to a good start. And I thought lineup-wise, first and foremost, it sort of picked itself. And I think O'Neill hinted at it pre-match in terms of Bellegarde getting a start and sort of hype and how well he was doing in training. But Tom, for yourself, 4-3-3, your initial reaction sort of seeing that lineup? I mean, it's horses, of course, I guess, to a degree, but I'm guessing particularly sort of seeing Bellegarde come in was a promising sign.
I was quite happy with the lineup actually when I looked at it. Probably what I'd have picked. I know there's always that debate about Kuna being a nine, and again, it didn't really do that any favours yesterday, did he, on those misses he had. But I was quite happy with the lineup, to be fair. I'm quite pleased Huang was starting. I was really pleased Bellegarde was starting because I think we needed it, because I think we needed a little bit more sort of in the middle, that he could drop into the middle if we needed to. And I thought the back four pretty much picked itself. So there's that debate about left back, isn't it? But I mean, Aitnori's bagged Salah pretty much every time I've watched him play against him. So that, I think that's sort of, again, was the right decision on that one. So yeah, I was happy enough.
Yeah, it sort of, you say, kind of felt like it somewhat picked itself, particularly that back four seems to be the back four at the moment. And particularly with Tommy Doyle, I guess, coming back from injury and sort of probably not still being 100% match fit. The other, I guess, notable start for me was seeing Quang start. He's had quite a few impacts off the bench, hasn't he, Ed? And sort of guess, rewarding him with a start paid off as well.
Yeah, I think he's proved to be the only one in the team that knows where the back of the net is, I think, on a consistent basis. And yeah, on the right, slightly different to where we've seen him normally. But yeah, he had to start, didn't he? The performances he's put in off the bench, the goals he's picked up, I think he has to be our starting right winger. I have concerns with him going backwards. We've seen defensive lapses in the past with him. And we don't need more Semedo hate with him being left on his own in an island. So we need to make sure that we've got cover in front of him as well as on the left-hand side as well. But I think the back four picked itself, and Huang's paid himself into the team, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think that's really important because he's someone who, for me, has got a lot of grief over fans over his Wolves tenure, and deservedly so, don't get me wrong. But slowly but surely, he's kind of, I guess, found his feet in this team, and of all the indifference at the start of the season, he's like a quiet shining light in what we're doing. But the thing that kind of stood out for me, I found it on Who Scored, was we were really critical after the Crystal Palace game a few weeks back in terms of players feeling like they're out of position, everyone getting each other's way. And when you look at like the average position of that first 11, it looks like a formation. It looks like, it's a very clear 4-3-3, and you've got, obviously, Lamina sitting deep, Bellegarde slightly ahead of Gomez. But it's particularly in the first half, Josh, it looked really sort of just natural. Everyone sort of knew where they were supposed to be.
It felt very defined, didn't it? It was like there was a plan this week of, you looked at Palace and it was like, get to the final third. It was, what are we going to do? And like O'Neill alluded to it in his interview after Palace, where he said, we get to the final third and we struggle with some to the, you know, the ideas. So it's nice that we've kind of played yesterday and we get to the final third and there was a plan. Although, you know, it did feel a bit at times like it was Neto hero ball, you know, it stayed on Neto. And that was, it did work for us, but it's not going to work like that every game. But I know it's just not nice to see. I thought first half, obviously, like we're going to allude to it, we played really well. The way we was picking the ball. But I also think you allude, look, what you said, Rich, as well, is when you said about the early kickoff, I thought Liverpool, this is a chance you could get points off these. You know, they had all half the players away on international break and things like that, obviously weak at the back. I thought this is a chance for points here, you know, especially being at home. And then maybe we got 2 points or at least a point.
Yeah, I think it felt like O'Neill definitely got the game plan right in the first half. And I think Liverpool's track record last season, was it something like 6 early kickoffs?
No,
zero wins. Yeah. And, you know, it seemed like they had a real game plan to get into them straight from the start, and using Neto, who I think has very clearly now shown that he is a left winger rather than a right winger.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd be fascinated to find out if there's anyone still thinks he should be playing on the right wing, because that display was brutal in the first half yesterday. I genuinely cannot almost remember the last time I saw him be that good.
Good, yeah.
Mm.
It's been a while. He's got that really, interesting thing where he really gets his head down and he gets his body in this sort of position, and then he just bolts. And we haven't seen that for ages. I don't know if he's worried about, you know, picking up another injury or something like that, but he really shows some sort of tenacity there. And Gomez was shit scared of him and couldn't get anywhere near him. And I think that has to be the case going forward. He has to just stay on that left-hand side. It's just a given. I think at the start of the season, he was playing on the right and Hwang was on the left. So they've obviously moved Hwang to accommodate Neto on the left now, because they just realised that that is where he has to play. And most of our good play came from him. And that was a massive positive for me yesterday. If we can get Neto back anywhere near to that little purple patch he had in COVID, then it's going to stand us in really good stead for the rest of the season. Fingers crossed.
You looked comfortable, didn't you? That's what I felt.
Mm.
Yeah.
He's asking for the ball a lot more. And yeah.
Yeah, I think it just seemed to, like, say he looked comfortable, looked confident in himself. And he sort of said that there have been times in the last year that I wouldn't say he shirks the challenge, but he's almost felt like he's there but not present. Whereas yesterday, say it was like he wanted to be the main man. And that's what we need, someone who has got that sort of drive to really kind of push us forward. And, you know, a player, let's be honest, he was like you mentioned, Liverpool had a very weakened back line. You know, they're playing a centre half at right back effectively. They're playing an 18-year-old, 19-year-old at centre back. That was a team who needed to actually be put under pressure, and he seemed to be the champion of that. And it showed somewhat. And I think, interesting, you know, we mentioned Hwang, and he was brought in. I think the benefit of having Neto on the left, on his, I say, more natural side, gives us the width. But Hwang being more of a centre forward, the goal was brilliant for me, because don't get me wrong, you've got Neto's, you know, ludicrously good dribbling skill. But then, because you've got Hwang, who, you say, yeah, his first touch ain't there, he's not great defensively or necessarily linking up play, but he's got a very good knack of getting in the right positions and finding the right bit of space. So having someone who, you know, does what you need to from a right-sided or, you know, right-sided attacker, wing forward, whatever you call it, his job is when Neto gets the ball, is just to come inside. And it worked perfectly for the goal. I mean, I was going to say definitely our best goal of the season so far, but it's not really...
Slim pickings, isn't it? Slim pickings.
It was nice to score one with our feet, though, for once.
Not a shoulder. Yeah.
No shoulders, no heads. It wasn't even a consolation. It wasn't even a stat padder.
It was nice to actually hit the back of the net. Yeah. It just, like, trickled over the line. So it almost weighs a little bit. So even when it's a good goal, it's just like a little pee roller over the bloody line.
You took the words out of my mouth then. Of course, the keeper had to say, we could just let it go in, couldn't he, hit the back of the net?
Yeah.
everyone was like, has it gone in? Has it crossed the line?
I was going to say, it feels very football cliches, doesn't it? But, you know, like a commentator would have said, and Hwang hits the back of the net with that goal. It's like, did he though? but again, throughout first half, it wasn't just yet Neto, but the whole tempo of the team. And, you know, I could happily talk about the fullbacks. And Aiton always a great one because, Thomas, you said, I don't ever think I've seen him play badly against Salah. I don't know what it is, but he just has him in his. He has his number.
Yeah, every time. I mean, look, even that. I remember that game against Liverpool the last time. Man, he went off with cramp then as well. Was it for the last? Yeah. Origi scored. And he was only off the pitch for, you know, sort of 5 minutes, and then Salah sort of bagged. You know, I think he assisted Origi then. I think.
Yeah.
And then again, it was sort of like almost carbon copy. You know. Yesterday, unfortunately, but he's brilliant. He didn't have much influence going forward, but I mean, if you're keeping a guy like Salah quiet, you've got to take that. You know, he was fantastic. And to be fair, when he did get forward, he linked up the play quite well as well. Him and Neto seem to have a little bit going on that side. So yeah, I've got absolutely no. I mean, other than his fitness, I've got no complaints. But he's one of the fittest players I think we've got, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was gonna say he seems to. Be a man constantly played with cramp and hamstrings, which I can relate to and appreciate, but...
So 60 minutes, though. Yeah. 60 minutes and you haven't played for 2 weeks.
It's a bit more, like, isn't it?
It's not right, is it?
I was thinking that when, like, I saw a clip... I think he must have been when he was coming off injured. Because he's grown his hair out a bit. He's got a bit of a straggly beard. He somewhat doesn't look like a footballer for me at the moment. He does look like he's just rocked up down the park. I'm just like, yeah, I'll give you an hour. Got an hour in your legs, which somewhat isn't necessarily great. But two players, I think, particularly in the first half, the man with multiple pronunciations, Jean-Rickner Bellegarde. I'm thrown out there now, guys. I think he's got potential to be a big cult hero. You shouldn't fall in love after about 70 minutes. I appreciate it, but
I've done that too many times to get too excited.
Yeah. Positive, wasn't it?
It was definitely positive.
That touch from it, the sky, and he chested it down.
That was outrageous.
That was. I was like, wow. You might actually be quite good here. Matt Hobbs has done it again.
Yeah. You just see Matt Hobbs just in the box. You're welcome, guys. You're welcome. But you're right. Like that, I mean, that touch kind of exemplified it for me because, you know, good players find space. And, like, he should have no right to be able to just chest the ball down in the middle of the park after, you know, clearance. But that's what good players do against Wolves. And he was doing it for us. Yeah. Does that make sense?
We need players who can beat men. That's after we lost Nunes. We needed a replacement, someone who could do that. And it's great. Someone who literally just glides past players, like they're not even there. I think it's going to be critical on how we play. We saw how it was against United, and we did the same against Liverpool in the first half. We just went through their midfield every single time. High press, high pressure. You know, and players who can move with the ball at their feet. So I think. Again, as the debut goes, I mean, okay, he blew himself out like a lot of them did, but he was superb. It's great. I mean, Nunes had a handful of good games for us, and he's already had, you know, he's had one.
Yeah,
it was his debut. Oh. So you can't really complain. Can't complain at that.
No, that's sort of my thing, and you know, there are going to be comparisons, I guess, throughout. Bellegarde's time at Wolves isn't there about that comparison to Nunes, but you can literally see why they've identified him as a player that they want. And yeah, I genuinely struggle to think of like games where I go, you know what, Nunes was great, where you know, he had a really good game and influenced the game, whereas you could see Bellegarde influence it a lot more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he really fitted, didn't he, with Lamina and Gomez in the middle, didn't he? Because he wanted the ball, but everything they do is sidewards and back and conservative, and he was the exact opposite of that. Every touch he took was to go forward, was to drive, was to carry the ball. And he's the right age for the players we need to be signing right now. We can't take another punt on a youngster. And we can't keep signing Dawsons because they're not gonna balance out. That's not how it works. You've signed someone that's had, you know, I know it's the French league, but it's a very physical league, the French league. It might not be the best quality, but the league itself is physical, and it's the style of play is quite similar to English football in terms of you have teams that will come and have a go. I know PSG walk it, and you can tell that he's played in a league that is competitive. I think that was the difference. Mm-hmm. He wasn't, he's not raw, is he? He's almost at his finished article. And that's what we need right now. We haven't got time for bedding in players. We don't have time for that. So we need someone to come in and go, give me the ball and let me do something with it. We really need that, especially in the midfield.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah.
So I say, it looks like he can play in the 10 as well. And we haven't had a player like that for ages. That Pedersen in the 10 was an absolute myth. We haven't had a number 10.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last 10 we had.
I was going to say, looking at your heat positions, Tom, like you're right, he's just like a little bit further forward, but you can see him like owning that big pocket of space, and the amount of times he'd pick it up on the left wing and he'd, you know, just drag it a little bit further forward, or you see him just pop on the right and supporting Semedo. Just how he operates almost on that, the line between the middle and final third. He's got so much potential there.
Yeah. I think Gully said it as well on Twitter yesterday. He's going to be crucial against the teams, right? Like against Luton, you can see it being the sort of game where he makes the difference for us. You know, it's just same little things. It's also, I already trust Bellegarde in the middle more than I did Nunes ever. You know, I think with Nunes, it was like, put him in the middle. It was like, you know, what's going to go wrong? Whereas Bellegarde, I just thought, he can put in a bit of work at the back. He's not afraid to chase around and stuff like that and put in the dirty work as well. So, I mean, considering we sold Nunes for however much and got Bellegarde for 15, you can't complain to that, even if he don't play well every week. It's another option in midfield that we were crying out for.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it's on the face of it, you're right, it seems like it's a perfect replacement. We've got someone who's that bit more tried and tested, as you said, Ed, that he's not coming in at 20. In fact, if he's a little bit older, I think it definitely shows. And I love João Gomes, and I thought yesterday he was fantastic in the tackle, but he does still sometimes show those bits of naivety and those little lapses in concentration. It's not big lapses all the time, but it's just that it can be that difference at this level, and you know, the fact that we've been a bit more astute than, you know, spunking £25 million on a Portuguese.
It's one of them, isn't it? If that was Brighton, probably the media would be wanking themselves silly, going, on social media, going, they've done it again. You get these tacticals on Twitter going, can't believe they've done it again. Look at this Brighton, but because it's little old Wolves and stuff like that, it's like, you know, they're not going to bat an eyelid at it. And it's just like, you know, it's a bit unfair, really.
Yeah, completely agree. And I say, sort of, particularly in the first half, that midfield of Lamina, Gomez, Bellegarde just dominated it. And you know, you hear the whole things about, you know, why are Liverpool not doing well? Why aren't Liverpool doing it? It's like, because we're doing really well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't we're sticking everyone behind the ball.
The match of the day coverage was criminal, I found.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure our goal was even shown when they were talking about the game afterwards. And we scored first and we dominated. The whole thing was, from the second half, Liverpool did so much better. It's hard not to think, oh, this is proper big team bias, isn't it? Because our goal was, I genuinely don't think it was showing on Match of the Day when they were talking about it afterwards. And that is nuts to not at least go, here's the goal they scored, and then here's how Liverpool changed it up in the second half. They didn't even give us that.
No, and it's, you know, I think, depending on, I guess, who you support, I guess how you frame a frame a conversation, you know, particularly the media outlets. It was like, you know, what Liverpool did to, you know, change the game. Why were Liverpool playing so badly? Whereas, you know, fortunately for ourselves, you know, we're what Wolves did well. But I feel like that's a big conversation, I think, kind of moving forward, because it all went a bit Sven-Goran Eriksson in the early 2000s. First half good, second half not so good. Because once again, after the half time, we just seemed like a different animal. And we just, minute by minute, we just kept going further and further and further back.
You knew what was coming. You knew, yeah. You knew what was
like. First goal.
You've seen it so many times. And it was, I said to him, mate, it's like, you're one nil up. We sit deep. We've not gone forward with the back. We've not changed it. Liverpool score one goal, which was always going to happen. Then it's so hard for the players to pick themselves up and go back and go into like it was in the first half. That was always going to happen. And it was so criminal. It was, you probably should have, and you're going to come on to this with the subs, but I think you bought the wrong striker on as well.
100%.
Yeah. I think whether it's the difference of levels between managers or what, but you know, you had Klopp who made subs at half time, and then he made another set of subs 5 minutes afterwards or something.
Yeah.
And it just felt like, you know, Klopp shifted the game. And don't get me wrong, Rockets were probably arses in the away changing rooms, but that the tactical changes, we just could not cope with them, and nor could we impact what we were doing on those changes anyway. And it felt, just as soon as that first goal went in, and Liverpool deserved that equaliser over that sort of 60 minute spell. Okay, that's fair enough. But then that double substitution that Gary O'Neill made was the real turning point for me. As you say, like, I think I agree. I think the wrong striker came on, and then I thought bringing Matt Doherty on as well just didn't really work for me either. I don't quite know what he was brought in to do or what he did when he came on personally.
He was brought in to stop Robertson, wasn't he?
That's what, just to give some aid of support. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're coming off at half time, and and I was like annoyed. It's weird. Like, we played so well, and I was annoyed. I said to my dad, I said, well, I guarantee we will regret that, because we should have been two, maybe three up.
I mean, we've not even talked about Kunas.
Well, that's it.
I don't want to speak for itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Don't have to do too much of that. But it wasn't just that, was there? There was loads of other chances, those like half chances. For me, we were much better in that half than we were when we played Liverpool and we beat them 3-0 in the first half last time. You know, I know we were 2-0 up at half time, but I think we actually played better yesterday in that 45. And there was absolutely no way Liverpool were not going to react at half time. As much as I don't like Klopp, he's a world class manager, and world class managers can change things up, especially with five subs now. They can put it right. They can put it right, and they've got enough quality. I mean, you had Diaz and coming straight off the bench. They've got enough quality on the bench now that they can just switch it up and play another 45. And we're not a 90-minute team, unfortunately. And we have to be a 90-minute team to win games, whereas Liverpool can be a 45-minute team and win games. And that's the difference.
I think the second half performance was a reaction from the players, not the manager. I think we dug our trenches because we didn't have... They clearly weren't expecting the changes that happened, and then there wasn't anything from the sidelines to fix it, because they dug their trenches 20 yards out before the double substitutions, before anything else happened. We went back, and there's a picture of Gary O'Neill about 5 minutes into the second half on Sky or TNT, whichever it was on, and he looked like he didn't know what to do. And I'm not trying to be COD psychologist, and definitely not Gary O'Neill, but like, that's the impression he was giving me. And if the players look over and they don't know exactly how we're going to counteract this tactically, they're going to revert to type, aren't they? They're going to think, this is Liverpool. They won the league a few years ago. They've got Salah, Robertson, bloody hell, Trent's not even playing. We need to dig deep now. We need to go deeper. And I think it was happening before we made these strange substitutions that we're going to talk about. I think there was a reaction from the players rather than a reaction from the manager yesterday that caused us to go that defensive that quickly.
Whose job is that to dictate that from the pitch, or to get you higher up the pitch, or to give, you know, you once they cross that line, there's got to be some form of leadership. I'm not a massive fan of having a dig at Kilman's captaincy abilities, but that probably has got to come from the captain, or at least, you know, this leadership group that we hear of, you know, so 100%. Much. 100%. So there's got to be a little bit of that from the pitch, and I agree. It was probably lacking yesterday, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I've got a little segment where I kind of gauge all your thoughts on, which kind of I guess relates to a lot of that game management to a degree, because it just felt like we just didn't have any in the second half, and I think you know, but they obviously made. You know, they made their subs at the same time they scored effectively, because I think Gakpo, on TV, they were sort of saying, and he's about to come off, and then he scored, and then he, you know, they, interestingly, I guess for me, they still kind of went ahead and was like, no, he's still coming off. It doesn't matter if he's just scored, he's still, you know.
It was pretty awful.
It was the obvious sub. But, you know, how many times have you seen it when, you know, particularly if centre forward scored, they keep him on even though they plan on taking him off. But, you know, the fact that Klopp was able to sort of sense the changing tides, and he, you know, whether it was 1-1 or 1-0, they had that mentality and that belief that, no, we still need to keep pushing balls, and, you know, bringing on Darwin Nunes and Harvey Elliott, you know, in a slightly deeper position than Diogo Jota's going to bring that, I guess. And you mentioned then, you know, our reactive subs to it was, you know, Matt Doherty coming on for Wanky Chan and Fabio Silva coming on for Kuna. And yeah, Josh, I can see you.
I understand. You know, like, just going back a little bit, you're not going to have the ball for 90 minutes against Liverpool. They're far too good for that. Like, they're just going to keep the ball and things like that, and you're going to have to suffer to beat them. But you bring on subs, and like, I mean, I think it speaks volumes that Klopp was losing at half time. Takes off McAllister, the midfield two, then with Szoboszlai, like attacking midfielder, and Jones, who's like a. He's not a defensive midfielder either. And we couldn't even get out of him once, really. Did we have one shot in the second half, one or two shots in the second half? That's it. I mean, like, he bought on Fabio, and I don't want to dig it in, but I can't stop. I can't pretend anymore that it's going great. It's not, you know, he's not, for me, a proper striker. He's like Cooney in the mould of, he's not a striker, he's a number 10. You know, he's not got the hold up, he's not got the first touch. Things, you know, I think I could have defended against him yesterday, and I'll play goals on a Friday. You know, I'm crap. I find it really odd. And you look at that young lad, the 18-year-old. If you put our three strikers, you know, before the game and said, pick which one do you not want to defend against, he'd have said Sasha. And yet, he's the only striker that didn't play. You know, and I just wonder sometimes. Like, what's running? I think has O'Neill been told? You've got to play Silva, like, as part of him coming in, because we had 2 weeks of searching for a manager, couldn't find no one better than O'Neill, and then we've settled on playing attacking football, which he's not known for, and then he was playing Fabio Silva when what Sasha done wrong to not get played. And I'm starting to wonder these things, like, what's really going on behind the scenes? Is it being dictated to him rather than him doing the managing?
He's horses for courses a bit, I think. Like Fabio, I'm going to beat around the bush. He's awful with his back to goal. Yeah, he bounces terrible. Off him. He's got his touch, like Huang's first touch with his back to goal. He's got no strength to hold it up. Put him at the face in the goal, he's a completely different player. You could argue that if Fabio had been up front first half, he probably had a goal or two. But yeah. He was definitely 100% not the striker to bring on at all. He was awful. He's not the reason why we lost.
I'm not saying that we're already on
a losing streak from that. But I'm still hoping it's going to come good for him, and I'll still back him 100%. But there's games for Fabio, and there's games that he shouldn't be playing. And yesterday was 100% one of those.
It's just look, Everton. He didn't do a fat lot. Didn't get into the centre half, playing off Cunha. He just didn't get that Branthwaite. Look, one of his first games for Everton, lost the drills in the first 10. It's like, you know what's happening. Palace again, two big centre halves, and I know Gay and Anderson are really good centre halves, but again, he doesn't do a fat lot for me. And it's like, at what point are we just going to go right? Stick Sasha in the middle. I know it's crap football or whatever. Are you just going to stick it in the box or stick it long? Because that's what it feels like we're playing to at the minute. You know, I'd rather have Sasha on and do something different than play Fabio. And it feels like it's like you're playing with almost 10 men, I think, because you're carrying him and Cunha. You know, you're carrying two players there and we ain't got that luxury.
With a substitute... Go on, Rich. Go on.
I was going to say, for me, Sasha was the obvious one to bring on because he gets you up the pitch.
Yeah, that's what I see.
I didn't understand. So with substitutions, I was trying to think, what's the point of it? So I got the Doherty one. I didn't necessarily agree, but I got the Doherty one. Robertson was pushing up more. They had more space. Two right-sided defenders make sense. I didn't know, other than the miss, Cunha hadn't done much wrong. He wasn't tired. He wasn't blowing. I didn't see the point of the substitution at that time. And Cooney, for me, could have moved back to where Bellegarde was when he was going to blow himself out like he did and play that more attacking midfielder role. And we could have brought Sasha on and got people in and around him. What was the point? When Gary O'Neill made that substitution, what was he expecting Fabio to do? All he's going to do is to hide into nothing at that point. What is he going to be able to do? If anything, he's a finisher, isn't he? He's not a back to goal. He's not going to hold it up, like Tom said. And we weren't creating chances when we brought him on. So what is the point of bringing him on? I don't know what the purpose of that substitution was.
It almost continued just dragging us further.
We just went
down the pit. Yeah, we just continued it. And that's my thing. At least you've got Sasa, he's at least going to occupy your centre halves. And look, we'll talk about the Robertson goal, and I guess who's the most accountable. But at least if you've got somebody up there who admittedly is, you know, 6'6" or whatever he is, there's an opportunity, I say, for him to hold it up long enough to support him. If you bring on this, bringing on Silva's not going to do that. He's not good enough, you say, to play that bit deeper. To then turn on it and go. It just felt like the tactic was going to be, what we'll do is hopefully we'll win it, let's say, in the middle of the park in our own half. And what we'll do is we'll try and break out 70 yards of the pitch when we're already knackered.
Yeah.
And when you've already had 45 minutes of Neto doing it, who's blowing. Kuna had a great one in the second half as well, where, you know, he kind of dragged us all the way up the pitch and then... Actually, I was a bit frustrated with Frank because I think he made a wrong run. He was looking for a cutback rather than kind of hitting us at the far post where he actually scored earlier. But it just felt like a massive warning sign. And hindsight is everything. But if I was Gary O'Neill in that situation, I'd have probably brought on Toti Gomez and gone to a back three and got wing. You know, and
if you were doing that.
Yeah, I thought that was
going to play. I thought he was going to play. Yeah, 100%. I thought he was going to do that thing against Blackpool exactly. Yeah. I thought he was doing that. I said to my dad, I said, I think he's going to do, because Fabio was coming on. So I thought Cooney was going to stay on and they were going to play as a sort of a 9 and a 10. And then they were going to go to 3, you know, he's going to go to 5 at the back, which I'd have been well up for, to be fair, because
that would have made more sense.
100%. Yeah. Well, Liverpool were leaving, they were playing like literally four across the front line, weren't they? So
yeah, they went to 4-2-4, didn't they?
Exactly. So that's the counteract, you know, that's how you counteract that. And that's what I thought he was doing. But yeah, it was some weird bizarre.
It was really, and I think sort of for me, I said that. Watson trying to necessarily dig out Doherty in particular, but he's playing a position that ain't his. You know, that just didn't work because it felt like we kind of had two right backs on the pitch, and neither one quite knew what either one was supposed to be doing. And I think that's where I got set. You know, I always find the sort of the heat maps positional stuff really interesting, because you look at Bantz on the first half, I'd be fascinated to see it of how it kind of worked fell out second half, particularly after those subs came on. And yeah, it kind of just spelt warning signs even further. You know, those subs came, our subs came on, I think, sort of 67th minute, and then about 13 minutes later, the deciding goal, the Andy Robertson goal, happened. And I think Twitter and Molyneux is a buzz with who should be the most to blame. And yeah. I don't like using it. And I think how did I phrase it slightly nicer and slightly more like I've gone on a leadership course, but it's who's most accountable for all these goals? Because I think if we're being honest, it's a bit of everyone, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think depending on where you're about, I know, I guess if we start at the back, and I guess what triggered it all is Jose Sarr, who had his mad moment of the game. And as sort of our man Dan said on Twitter, what did Jose Sarr do wrong yesterday bar launch a poorly executed counter-attack demanded by our crowd, which was followed by our entire team letting their left back run off and score? And I think that's a really interesting place to start, because Dan is right, but he's also missing a bit of a big factor in it for me, in that was the catalyst. And we've already talked, like, that was goal was what, 80th minute, 81st? So he'd spent 35 minutes just giving up possession. And it just felt like, it felt hero ball, when we actually just needed to calm the fuck down.
And yeah, should have held it. And I know, but again, so, it's the fans, though. It's the fans. It's, yeah. Oh, we want to keep going at them. It's just, it's just one of the things, isn't it? The other thing for well is me is just getting to the goal. Like, if that was us, say, next weekend, you watch the Luton keeper kicks that ball out, Robertson, so I knew in that position, he would, I knew, no, he's not running 50 yards into the ball. He's getting that ball and he's going to try and float it back into the mixer. And the thing is, all Robertson's done is chances on there. All he's done is gone, I'm going to knock it out road and just run and create chaos. And it's worked. And it's like you say, it's poor from Sarr, but fans demanded it like we always do, because we just, well, I don't know what we're trying to do. And then you've got Gomez lets him off and Kilman doesn't come across and whatever and stuff like that. But like I say, we wouldn't score that goal. We'd never score that goal, because none of our players would ever have the endeavour to run into the box like that.
So my take on this goal might be controversial, but it is a pass and a half from Mohamed Salah. That pass is not a pass. It's not a pass that 99% of footballers can make, and probably 99% of them don't even think about it. That pass cuts out so many players that sometimes you just have to go, mistake there. Yeah, okay, but that is a through ball and a half. And sometimes the world-class players do that.
Mm.
We can, that against Luton, that pass won't be put through. Against, only three or four teams have players that have that vision. That is a ball and a half that he puts through there. And there are mistakes, but a lot of those wouldn't even be talked about, because that pass would have just gone and been intercepted, because it wouldn't have been that perfect. That ball is a world-class through ball that I think sometimes you just need to go, what else? We have made mistakes, but what can you do against a ball like that?
It's a fair comment.
Yeah.
We weren't there.
But the midfield should have done better, right?
Oh, yeah, no, there's mistakes. There's mistakes, but sometimes, I just think Sarr's made a mistake. He's tried to launch it to Neto, who's having the game of, had the first half of his life, first half that he's had since before, like COVID, like Tom said earlier. And it's hit a player. And then there are chances for us to pull it up. But I think that through ball is just ridiculous.
Yeah. I did see an interesting tweet about Mo Salah, and it was very similar. I cannot remember the guy's name. Grizz Khan, I want to say. He's a Liverpool blogger. And, you know, he sort of said, very few players in the world can do that. He's the most underrated right winger in Premier League history. I'm like, who on earth is underrated Mo Salah?
Ryan Atnuri, apparently.
Yeah.
all of those people on the screen that you just brought up, Richard.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, let's talk about it, because we conceded another one after this. It went down as a Hugo Bueno own goal in the end, and again, it felt like it was all kind of unraveling for Wolves at that point. And you know, at one point, I thought, crap, this could be 4-8 somehow. But again, we're shipping goals, and I don't quite know who takes a brunt of it. I know that there's a lot of talk about Kilman at the moment and being a captain and a leader. And personally, I don't buy into a lot of that, because I feel like a lot of people can be leaders in that pitch. And, you know, particularly if he's got someone like Craig Dawson next to him as well, and they can work in tandem. But I know for me, I think, to be honest, that Robinson goal kind of exemplified it for me. I do think with that defensive unit is being sold sometimes a little bit short by the midfield. And if you look at the amount of goals where they are coming through, and right, I feel shitty for saying it, because Lamina was fantastic first half. João Gomes was like a fucking terrier in the tackle. I love him to bits. But there are lots of moments when, you know, when you think of some of the goals, you know, let's say against Brighton, where midfielders are getting past us and scoring goals. And that, no one can tell me that's all on, you know, the centre-halves. And it's all on, you know, Jose Sarr having an occasional mad moment. I do think that something's not quite right in giving those defenders the right protection a lot of the time.
There's something not stacking up. I think a little bit is to do with fitness as well. Like, I think, because if you look at the stats as well, like, look, Man United were ending 0-0 at half-time, Brighton 1-0 down, Everton 0-0, Palace 0-0, and then we've gone in 1-0 up at the weekend. Tight games, you know, could go either way. Yet we've, in 3 of the 5 games, we've conceded 3 or more. Like, what is going on? You know, are we capitulating that much in the second half, or I think it's got to be fitness, you know, because O'Neill said when he came in, it was like, players ain't quite fit enough here. And I think because of, we're like busting our balls in the first half, like we did yesterday, pressing all over the pitch, and then getting to 70 minutes and we're just battered.
A lot of key players were just blown out, weren't they? So Bellegarde, Neto had a quiet second half. I mean, they all did, don't get me wrong, but obviously Aignori went off with cramp. Bellegarde lost his legs. Huang definitely lost his legs. I think, although Kuna didn't lose his legs, didn't he only come back from Brazil a couple of days ago or something like that?
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the reasons.
Yeah.
But then again, like you say, play him maybe until he's gone. But they all lost their legs, and they didn't help. But fitness has been an issue for us for years. And you can't blame O'Neill for that. He's only been here 6 weeks.
I think with Lopetegui, because when he came in, it was about coming in, tight at the back, stick, like, we go 1-0 up and stick men behind the ball. And, like, it was down to, like, Dawson and Kilman just to nod the ball out. It sounds a bit disrespectful. It's basic defending. It's why the defender's in the first place. All they've got to do is nod the ball out and stuff like that. Whereas O'Neill's coming and they're playing high line. And I think that's why Dawson's looking pants. And I think he'd have struggled under Larch if he'd have come in last summer, because he was playing a high line. He's going to get caught out. And I think that's what's going on. The players just can't play the high line.
Then how do you rectify that? Because you've settled on a system and you've
get
got
offensive,
you've got the players that you've got now. So then do you have to change everything back? Do you have to drop back to 10, 20 yards? I mean, I will say that it's nice to create chances. I mean, it's scoring a huge amount. But it's a better, it's more exciting to watch. I'd much prefer it for winning. Don't get me wrong, but I don't know. Is there a balance to be had somewhere?
Like, Bueno has literally got to come in and be Maldini, hasn't he? He's got to be like a Maldini.
Yeah.
We've got to uncover the biggest keep of all time for it to like somehow fix itself.
Yeah, we've essentially got to hope that he is Dawson with the pace of Adama Traore at this point. Like, it needs something. I think, you know, I think across this team and you know, I think Gary O'Neill has got to take a level of you know, responsibility and accountability, or whatever you want to, how you want to dress it up. Because, yeah, he hasn't had a lot of choice in terms of players, but I don't know. I feel like if you've got someone like Craig Gorson, even Max Kilman, to be fair, and I quite like Max Kilman, but I know you need some sort of sometimes play to your strengths. And I know this was Bruno Lage's thing in his first season, where he realised very quickly he couldn't do the type of football he wanted to play and sacrificed it because of the personnel he had. And, you know, I admire O'Neill for what he's trying to imprint on this team going forward, because you said, like, we've had a couple of seasons of very little creativity going forward, and the signs in these first few games have been really positive, apart from what, the Everton game, where I think just both teams just were the absolute dregs of football.
Just didn't want to lose, did they?
Yeah. In every other game, we've looked creative, we've looked expansive, we look like we kind of just know what we're doing up front. And
the thing is, it's teething troubles as well. Mm. I saw someone say on Twitter, like, we're not going to become like a ball playing or press team overnight. Oh, it's going to take time. And we've been unfortunate. We've come up against, like, we've had one of the hardest starts in the league, which hasn't really helped our cause either.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I did see the stat on Sky in terms of strength of schedule, and Wolves have effectively had the third hardest start of the season over the first five games, isn't it? It's based on sort of the average Opta power rankings of each of the teams that they've played. And I guess that does sort of put it in some perspective, and you've kind of, I guess, got to hope, if you're Gary O'Neill as the manager, head coach, whatever his job title is, that we've got to keep maintaining this belief, because part of me does get worried that we are creating these chances, but with every miss, that confidence is going to sort of dwindle that little bit more. And is I don't know, Neto going to do that extra burst? Is Kuna going to make that extra run into the box, because it's not come off for him as much as it's needed to? But I don't know. I've still got toxic positivity when it comes to us, because, you know, both I think
fans and club need to hold the nerve. Yeah, that's what it boils down to. Yeah. After the November, after the international break in October, we've got like Bournemouth, Newcastle at home. We've got a nice run of fixtures, and you think it's going to be painful, but just hot. Gully said it. Hold your nerve, boys.
Yeah, yes. I think there's. The midfield, I think, just to touch on that again, with Bellegarde now in, and he'll be the starter next to Gomez and Lamina, and then Doyle can come in for either Lamina or Gomez and do their job. Maybe the outball with Bellegarde will be there more naturally for them, and they will be able to sit a bit more and not have to break forward as much or break as many. In the first half, Gomez didn't stop running, and maybe he can manage himself a bit more when he knows he's got that outball, because like we talked about, Nunes was brilliant, but he didn't turn up in every game. If Bellegarde plays to 70% of what he did yesterday more frequently, we have a really good outball that's the release valve in that midfield, which means that he won't need to bust a gut to catch up. And Bellegarde will be the one driving forward, and Gomez can be the terrier. He doesn't need to do two jobs if we have a more consistent attacking midfielder.
Yeah, hopefully. I agree. And I definitely agree with that. I think it comes down to that almost positional sense, doesn't it? That if we can always get them sitting a little bit more. And it's not even all games. And I completely agree with all points. I think fitness plays a part to it. I think tactics are playing a part into it. I think personnel's playing a part in it. It's just one big melting pot. And, you know, hopefully, as you said, Josh, you know, we've got a few games until the next international break, mid-October, and O'Neill's got to get another period where, you know, we can maybe get another behind closed door friendlies, because, you know, Tommy Doyle came on, didn't really do an awful lot, and not an easy way to make your debut, and I guess he's not match fit in any way either, and you've kind of just got to say hope that Luton's going to be the game where we put a team to a sword.
The Luton's the big game. I think if we beat Luton, you'll probably say we're about where we should have been at the start. If you'd have looked before the season, you'd have gone 6 points from the first like six games. You'd have gone, it's probably about right, and it's where we're going to be. But I think the problem is if you lose to Luton, you can see, like, everyone's arse is going to be twitching into it.
Well, I was going to say...
City at home after that as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then Villa, like, it just... Mm. Like you say, you can see the disaster where it could unravel quickly. But I think beat Luton, it'll, like, 2 weeks of, like, it'll be all right. We can just bundle through City and Villa and get the international break and regroup again.
Yeah, I was going to say, interestingly, a couple of questions we had from Twitter Corner, and I guess looping on to Josh, you said, how long does Gon have? Gary Neal have? He's now had effectively a pre-season's worth of time. Excuses stop now? Question mark. Are we still giving him? I guess how much longer do you? I guess keep patient with him. We sort of thinking at what, November time, or let's. I say not put a hard deadline on it.
Yeah, I don't think that works. I don't think that works just because he's had 6 weeks. It's not 6 weeks training ground time, is it? It's 6 weeks having to play against all of these teams, which hopefully, barring Luton, can beat anyone on their day, barring Man City. It doesn't quite work. It's not as linear as that, is it, the timeline? it doesn't work. And then we've had an international break and some of them have gone away, some haven't. I think we have to be patient because who else are we going to bring in? Who's banging on the door for us to bring in?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, if Gary O'Neill is who we could get at a moment's notice.
Yeah, exactly.
Who are you getting at a moment's notice again? And
yeah,
I think for me, sort of, there are still sort of promising signs there. I think so long as we can kind of keep up that creativity going forward, you've just got to sort of hope for the best, to be honest. Right, a few more questions though, guys. Right, let's go for a nice one next. So Tears for Fears or Status Quo? Not that we'll hear either, probably into a cold wet Tuesday night in December. So who's got a preference?
Tears for Fears, indeed.
Yeah, I'll get Tears for Fears as well.
I'd be numbing an army, and I think I was Tears for Fears as well. Okay, one that I'd sort of seen knocking about on social media, I guess it seems to be a bit more prevalent these days, particularly against your bigger clubs. But from Steve Bird, will you be questioning the club's position regarding rogue fans in the South Bank? Are stewards expected to act? I guess this is related to fans selling / passing on their tickets and going to away fans in the home ends. Do you guys have any thoughts? Because I've got a couple on this and I don't know how controversial they are. So I was going to just pass it over to you and I'll just gauge whether I want to say mine out loud.
It's not a new thing, is it? It's always happened.
I don't overly care.
Yeah, it's happened since day dot. Now, I remember that classic, is it? Is it the footage of Jota's goal against United from the South Bank end? And I'm sure there's, like, you can see a United fan just putting his head in his hands and turning around. Yeah. It's, you know, and that's like, you know, someone's given up their ticket to watch Wolves and, you know, quarter final of an FA Cup against United. So it always happens.
That's fine, isn't it?
And how do you stop it? I mean, you know, it probably is easier to stop it now, you know, because you can track and trace, can't you? But I ain't that fussed, to be honest.
No.
Some outrageous thing?
I'm so glad you said that. I was going to say, I don't really care so long as you're not a dick. Yeah. Like, I don't get it.
They used to get a kick in, didn't they? They used to get a kick in. So, do you know what I mean? If they want to take the chance to get a kick in, fair
price. So, do you remember the Man United game when we won 2-1 and we had the Doyle goal and Doyle / Elokobi goal?
Yes. Yeah.
So, in the temporary stand, because I was in the South Bank, there were two United fans that got up for their goal and made themselves known, and they got a kick in. That's what happened.
Yeah. That's it.
That's what happened. And then they sat down for the rest of the game and we turned it around. But that was the end of it. They all had a couple of digs and everyone sat down and got on with it. That's just what happened.
Yeah. Well, I've done it before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you just got to keep quiet, haven't you?
This is probably not too controversial. I don't think it's that hard not to be a dickhead at a football game.
Mm.
And, you know, especially like, just understand you, like, maybe around a bunch of the fans, maybe don't go wearing colours. Maybe don't cheer for goals. You know, I don't know. I do think if you do get, I was trying to work it out as well. If you do get spotted and things like that, I think if you are like wearing like a Liverpool top in the North Bank or South Bank, wherever it was, it's hard for stewards. Don't get me wrong. They've got a tough job for, you know, what they get out of it. But yeah, you sort of got to
act. What can you do? Like, it's one of the things, like, if, like, it's only because we've lost that everyone's so arsed. If we'd have won, you're thinking, what a tit day. Like, spend like, what is this year's win? You know, you wouldn't care that much.
No, exactly. Right. Last question is from Martin, and I loved this. This is my type of questions, guys. So you sometimes hear fans say, I'd give my right arm to play for my club's last country. Which body parts would you sacrifice to see Wolves win an FA Cup, Premier League title, European title, etc.?
Well, which one is it?
Let's go scale here. I was gonna say it's like Carabao.
Give you my big toe.
Yeah I was gonna say let's go slightly realistic, because I feel like really sort of down when I say realistically we ain't gonna win Premier League. Let's go FA Cup because, you know, we've at least got to the semi final in living memory, so there's somewhat of a chance. So, see Wolves win the FA Cup. What are you getting rid of, guys? What are you putting on the table?
Like Deal or No Deal.
Yeah. I'm trying to work.
I'll give you a toe or a finger for it. I'll give you both for an FA Cup. Yeah. One from either side, so I'm balanced out.
Probably agree with that.
I think I could cope without my little finger on my right hand. I think I could get away with that.
You go all Beadle. I don't know. Yeah. I'll go toe on each foot.
Yeah. I've got one. Appendix?
Mine's already gone.
Yeah. Well, you
can't give you that one.
Can you imagine? And we're just one appendix short from winning. So there you have it. Let us know in the comments, guys, if what body parts you'd what you donate. We will be back, guys, on Thursday to preview the Luton game, where hopefully things are still kind of nice and merry at the moment, because I don't think we're anywhere near toxic balls levels and there's still a lot of positivity around the club. So hopefully we can start converting 45 minutes into 90 soon enough. But we will be back, of course, with the preview show with Little Dan. Big thanks to everyone who's watched live on YouTube, watched back on YouTube, and everyone who's listened on the pod. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe on YouTube. Make sure you give us a review on Spotify or iTunes, wherever you're listening on. And make sure you're following Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast on everywhere, to be honest. It's on all the socials. As I mentioned, even on TikTok, I probably need to actually do one at some point again. But they make me feel old when I try and do it, to be honest. So, but we learn. That's what we do. But until next time, it is goodbye from Tom.
See you guys.
It's goodbye from Ed.
I'll give in my appendix for 3 points at Luton.
It's goodbye from Josh.
I'd give my big towel for 3 points at Luton.
And it's goodbye for me. I'm not going to say what I'd give away.